This is space. This is the final frontier. These are the cases before the court. Its mission: legislate strange new crimes, seek out new perpetrators and new defendants, to jurisprudently go where no law has gone before. This is The People versus Star Trek Voyager.
The People versus Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one.
For the defense,
Commander Matthias Zapp Spurlock, Starfleet Pro Bono Legal Fund.
Prosecution.
Omega Fancy Lad Emeritus, John Q Continuum Esquire.
Judge.
The Honorable Midnightian Later.
May it please the court, case on the docket is 326 Scorpion, Part 1. Stardate 50984.3. Original air date 5/21/97.
Order in the court. As is well known to all here, these proceedings are being broadcast to Womp 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 Pooba. So I expect a civil tone and a consummate air of professionalism. No rancor, no ribaldry, and not even a sniff of the St. John's wort. The question before the court is this: is Star Trek Voyager a misunderstood gem, or just plain, tawdry garbage? Now your opening arguments. Keep them brief.
Your Honor, I will indeed be brief. This episode is such a tease. Give us a little bit of Kes Jedi, a little bit of Harry Kim, probably gonna die, and give me a little bit of John Rhys Davies and Janeway alone in a room. Oh my. Since this is just part one, I guess I'll support it, because obviously Kes will kill them all with mind bullets, Harry will actually die, and Janeway and Da Vinci are gonna get it on. Thank you.
Commander Spurlock.
Hard choices. Everyone wants to be in charge until it's time to make hard choices. And Janeway has had to make her fair share of hard choices on this 26,283-hour tour. Destroy the array or sacrifice the Ocampa. Allow Q to return the ship to Earth or remain neutral in their civil war. Spare Tuvix or kill him to bring back your friends. Just kidding, that one was easy. To hell with that weirdo. Like any good season finale, Scorpion Part 1 brings several thematic trends and character arcs to a collision point, and from the sound of breaking glass and squealing tires emerges a conflict that threatens to redefine Voyager as it enters its fourth season.
Now the evidence will be presented in the format agreed upon by the Fairfax Addendum to the Kittimer Accords. Audio recordings of three white guys interrupting each other. Play the holocron.
Not even a sniff of the horny goat weed.
So, cold open. Two Borg cubes reading their standard resistance is fute, and then they get blowed the fuck up. End of cold open.
Baby, we're on fire. We're on fire, baby.
Yeah, I was like,
I think they're gonna be resisting this time.
They got owned as shit.
Yeah, I was like, well, okay. This, I don't know if this is the shortest cold open. It has to be.
It has to be.
Because it's literally like, I think it's like 11 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, but that is a good cold open. Like, you've shown us the greatest, the big bad of the Star Trek universe. Two Borg cubes. They got blow the fuck up. All right, I'm interested.
Teenage Josh in 1997, like sophomore in high school, would have thought that was like, Where's my electric guitar? I got to shred right now. Like, there's something out there.
I feel it in my fingers.
That can just own the Borg like that. And they sort of jokingly hinted at it. Was that in Unity, I think? When Milana's like, unless there's something out there scarier than the Borg. I'm just kidding. That's impossible.
And admittedly, there's some more of this. We'll get to this a little bit later. But like, there is some, like, immaturity to how they present the threat, I would say. Like, everything has to be, like, 15 Borg cubes, and look how much more powerful my villains are than your villains.
A bigger Death Star. Yeah, an even bigger Death Star.
Yeah, it's got some of that, but it works.
Well, he's counting. He's like, I see one, no two, no three, no
14,
five. 14. Okay, there are 15.
I'm just going to come right out and say it. There are 14.
There are 15.
So right after the cold open, we're treated to a delightful fucking scene.
With John Reese Davies, Gimli Glowinson himself.
A god among men.
Yes.
Right.
We can all agree. He should be in everything. I still don't understand, as much as I enjoyed Sliders, every time I was like, why is John Rhys Davies in this? He's too good for this.
He's too good. You're better than this.
He's a god among men.
That's how I got so good.
Constant reps.
Gotta take that crappy lines and make them good. He was training.
Yeah. And this is a good scene. All the stuff with Da Vinci is pretty good in this episode. It's a little like, whenever they introduce this, like I'm talking to a historical figure on the holodeck, it can feel very schmaltzy. Mm-hmm. This works. I think partly because you got JRD in there, the man who invented gravitas. Give me the silliest fucking thing you have. I will make it. You will die for this character.
I will deliver it as if it is the most important line ever written in the history of human art.
Has there ever been a movie with him and Brian Blessed in it?
I don't know.
Talking to each other? That would be
for 2 hours.
That'd be a battle for the ages. But anywho, so they're in his workshop. They're talking about, you know, he's doing this job for the cardinal, and the cardinal promises eternal gratitude. but Janeway's like, so would you like to accept my proposal? And he's like, nope. He's like, I just need a place to work on my own projects, a little bench, a little space, a little shelf. And he's like, nope. But then they start talking about this thing he's working on, the arm of Hephaestus, which is supposed to replace manual labor for blacksmiths.
Yeah.
And I'll go ahead and say, like, when they show the interworkings, where they pull that gear and that pin, I was like, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
This is a beautiful, practical effect. Mm-hmm. Like, great.
How long did it take to build that prop for this one, like, 15-second sight gag of it breaking and him having the sort of cantankerous professor moment?
Yeah, I want to believe they made it all custom for this, because this whole episode feels like spend the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, it feels like this is it. This is our big shot to, like, get season four to happen and go past season four. Spend the money. Don't ask any questions. Just do it. Which I think works to great effect in this episode, because this episode feels like a total, almost reboot of the entire show. The energy is different. The way it's shot is different. The money spent on it is clearly different. I would love to believe they built that whole robot automaton arm custom for just this one shot. Part of me believes that probably it's just a thing that's been around that they modified.
Well, it's based on a real
thing. Oh, one of his real designs. Yeah. So probably made for whatever reason. But then she starts looking at, this looks like a flying machine. It's like, oh, well, you seem to base it on like a sparrow. Have you thought of basing it on the hawk?
Glide instead of flap.
Yeah. And then he's like, yes, you will help me fly it. And she's like, and then he's like, okay, you can have what you want. A corner, one workbench for 10 sesterces. I don't know what currency he was referring to. 10 coins a week. And then Janeway, for no reason, is like, 7. Like, I just love, like, this is meaningless. Like, you're just role-playing in your Vidya game. And I might need to, and he's like, you got to provide your own material. She's like, I might need to borrow a few things. And I'm like, she's got to negotiate. It's delightful. But unfortunately, our time with JRD and Da Vinci gets cut short, and she gets called to the bridge.
For captain shit.
Yeah, some shit. They're very concerned. Because 2 months ago, they sent out a probe ahead of them, and it stopped transmitting. And the last thing it shows is literally like a Borg, like looking at it. Like,
what the heck is this?
And they're like, okay, we've been worried about this for a while. This could be it. We might be hitting the edge of Borg space.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of snap into action, like, okay, well, there's no going around it. It would take, it's a gigantic territory, as best we can tell. So we can't go around it. We have to go through, unless we just want to tack on like 20 years to our travel, seems to be the deal. And they figure out, okay, through Borg space, there's this narrow corridor where there are no Borg present. If we can get to that corridor and just go through it as fast as we can. That's the best way to go. And they nickname it the Northwest Passage, which is cool. Love it.
Yeah. There's a string of quantum singularities. They assume that's why the Borg aren't there, but they're thinking with a small, nimble ship, they can kind of, they can ride the eddy.
Better to ride the rapids instead of facing the hive.
Would have been a cool tie back to that episode, like two episodes ago, where they sent Paris out to ride the eddy in a shuttle for like no apparent reason.
No real reason.
Yeah. Just, they knew this was coming. He needed the practice.
They needed the energy for the thing.
Then we go to a staff meeting, which I was excited to see the doctor at the staff meeting that he started attending in person. Doesn't have to be on the screen anymore. I'm sure Robert Picardo loves that. And he starts talking about, I've analyzed that Borg corpse that we found, good continuity, for every way I could possibly can, and what I can learn and how to try to fight back against assimilation, which we'll get more to in a later scene. We also, basically it's Janeway going down the line, like, okay, Neelix, we're not going to be able to resupply. He's like, okay, it's fine. I've already got a plan to extend our food, a.k.a. we're only eating that one casserole. Sorry.
Yep. Glop for weeks.
It'll keep you alive. Just going down the line to each department, like, you need to do this, and you need to do this. And then she's like, okay, we knew this was coming, but there's no way to underestimate the danger of us going into Borg space. I have faith in each and every one of you. And then she's like, let's do it. And I was like, I'm getting pumped. I'm like, hell yeah. Competent people working together. This is what Star Trek's about.
But that's what ship captains always say when they know that at least some of the people in the room are not going to survive what's about to happen.
I'm remembering your faces
at
this moment.
Shepard always, in every Mass Effect game, Shepard gives a speech like that to the assembled crew at some point. I'm proud of all of you. I appreciate everything you've done, and there's no one I'd rather serve with. Now go, 30% of you.
Look in their eyes. Get killed. Shake their hand. Yeah. Take a quick picture.
Yeah.
They're like, Shep, I feel like you're worried about this mission.
Can I have a lock of your hair for no reason?
But then we go to a sick-ass montage of
preparations,
wheeling things around, hammering on things. It's great. I love it. It's great. Then we go to sick bay, where it's Kes with her right hair, not her wig hair from last episode. Basically, the doctor making the plans, talking about assimilation, about how it works, that we can't prevent them from getting their spikes into the human body. It can go through anything, even titanium. Good setup for what payoff later
even
on.
Even shields.
Even shields. So our battle must be waged inside the body itself, which is a great line, especially for a medical officer.
Yeah.
It basically works like a virus. It takes over blood cells. And so I feel if we could find a way to amp up our immune system in some way, we can solve it by kind of hacking our immune system. Maybe that's the best way to approach this. And then Kes walks over and is kind of staring at the parts of the Borg corpse that have just been there this whole time.
The telepath music, you can hear it slowly gaining volume in the background.
This is a total digression.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I have another one after that.
Okay. I just want to give a shout out to Thundercats. About 40 episodes into Thundercats, all of a sudden it's revealed that Tigra has amazing telepathic illusion powers. And they're like, oh, but he never uses them because he saves them up. He stores up the energy just so he can dunk on you when it's time. And because it's in the section where they're like Lion-O's has to do all these tests and has to fight each of the Thundercats, aka the best part of the show.
Yeah, I like that part.
But I bring this out because they have a piece of music that is only used for that one moment when Tigra uses his psychic power, and it slaps. That's all I wanted to share today.
Totally worth it.
Episode over.
Waiting 40 episodes.
To bring us back into the episode, I would like to note that John Reese Davies had a hand double for this episode. For the close-up shots.
Oh, for the fine-tuning on the machine?
I guess.
To pull that gear out.
He had a hand double.
Were his actual hands jacked up or something?
I don't know.
Well, honestly, because he's a very big dude. He has huge hands.
He probably wouldn't
be able to pull out that little gear.
He'd just crush it like Lenny and the puppy.
Yeah.
As someone with giant hands, too, I wouldn't have been able to do that quickly and beautifully, gracefully on camera. Yeah.
Also, the Da Vinci bit was Kate Mulgrew's idea.
Oh.
Listen to Kate Mulgrew. Mm-hmm. Hear me through the time warp, Voyager writers. Whatever she wants, do it.
Who would dare defy her?
Them.
Them. Yeah.
Apparently.
Oh, right.
Those guys.
Those guys. Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, so she has the telepathic moment, and we get this crazy shot of a pile of Borg corpses.
Borg, like, heads.
And the answer to your question is Catherine the Great is the film that has both Brian Blessed and John Rhys-Davies.
Oh. Just people, so you know. Add it to my Netflix queue.
Catherine the Great.
Catherine Zeta-Jones as Catherine,
wait,
I guess.
So it's like modern?
Yeah, it was in 95.
Do they talk to each other?
Don't know.
I mean, I'm going to watch it now.
They're both listed as in the cast. I don't know.
We'll find out.
I have no idea. We'll watch it and find out.
We'll find out.
Patreon subscribers only.
Yeah. We'll talk about watching Catherine the Great, apparently.
And if that doesn't get you to throw money at us.
I don't know what will. But anyway, so this crazy shot of a pile of fucking Borg body parts.
Mm-hmm.
In what, we only see it for a split second now. We get a better look at it later. But it's unsettling and disturbing in a way that Star Trek normally is not.
Yeah.
And it feels totemic in some way. Like, it gives me, like, not all the way, but slight, like, True Detective vibes of,
right.
Like,
yeah, I was going to say, they're not in there like, hey, put that's the junk room for the Borg body parts.
No.
Like, they look like they're stacked or almost, like, fused together in a very deliberate way.
Yeah, it feels purposeful. And because we've already had the cold open of two Borg cubes being destroyed, we're like, because what's scary about the Borg is they're ultimately like ants. They're kind of clinical.
Mm-hmm.
There's no malice or...
They don't take pleasure in what
they don't
do.
Take pleasure
they
in
do
destroying
it because
you.
That's what they are.
Yeah. And so obviously if you're going to have something that's more powerful than the Borg that is going to be a new villain, you need to move the needle in the other direction to something deeply fucked up and also something that would take pleasure in... violating a body in this way.
You got to layer some psychological terror on top of the mortal terror that the Borg bring.
It worked.
Yeah.
Like that moment, I was like, okay, I'm concerned. Like this also is not normal television language for Star Trek.
Right.
Like that sort of horrific body horror almost. I was like, it felt very much like Voyager, like we're making a move. You're either with us or you're not, but we're going there.
And it makes you, the characters, but you as the viewer also suddenly painfully aware of the fact that this is 130 some odd people in a tiny little ship with no support. So whatever this giant horror is that can own the Borg like that, they're even less equipped to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great. That's great.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly the kind of like survivalist perched on the edge of death kind of feeling that you should get a little more often with Voyager. Probably. I mean, to play up the fact that, you know, they don't have support. This is not the Federation versus this thing. This is one tiny ass little ship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's good stuff.
Thanks for finally doing that three seasons in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And basically, so Kes sort of stumbles out of her vision. She's like, the Borg, dozens of them, dead. And then we jump to the bridge where they're like, how's Kes? And they're like, well, she keeps having these telepathic visions of Borg being the death of the Borg and the destruction of Voyager, which I thought it was interesting that they didn't show us her vision of the destruction of Voyager. Just mm-hmm. We sort of learn about it. And then I do like the word Janeway's like, well, I can't discount her visions. Like, I think they're real. At this point, there's no like, maybe she just had a weird dream.
Yeah.
But it's not enough to change our plans. So we're going to go ahead. And then we get into this great moment of like, we're into Borg space. And then it's like transwarp signatures, red alert. We've been dropped out of warp. And then there's 15 Borg vessels, yep. Which is excessive, Brandon Braga. I'm like,
yeah.
It's like, it's very like, I'm going to have 15 of them.
Yeah. Well, they're near Borg space, which is something we've never had before in Star Trek. Like, it's always been Borg scouts.
Oh, yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
That were in the, you know, so this is, if they're going to introduce this idea of, no, the Borg have a homeland, essentially. Mm. It's their base of operations. You're right. It feels like Braga's trying to be like, Rick Berman never did this at TNG, mm-hmm. You know, but even if that is his motivation, it's justifiable. It makes sense because they're in proximity to
Borg. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Even me being like, this seems excessive. Still, when they finally have the like shields to maximum on screen and you see all 50 of them, I was like, my God, they're boned.
Yeah.
Like,
boned.
This is a threat that overwhelms anything they could ever possibly do. They're all dead. Like, And basically, the Borg, one cube spins around, scans them with a Polaron beam, and they're like, "We're being scanned." And I'm like, "No shit!" Like, I mean, I know they got to call things out; it's procedure. But also, like, Janeway's like, "Think good thoughts."
Yeah. she doesn't even flinch. Like the beam kind of goes across Chakotay's face,
like,
and
he's like,
and she doesn't even blink that bright green light in her
eyes. No, this is Valkyrie mode.
Yep,
Janeway. She's like, "I'm ready to lead us into death."
When the lights go down on the bridge, Janeway, it's a different person.
Yeah,
she calls red alert.
And then they just fly off. They leave them behind, and I felt the relief in my chest as manipulative as this moment was. Mm-hmm. You have to admit when it works. Like I was like, okay, thank God they're fine. Like, because I, as a Star Trek fan, understand completely how bad this is.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then them just going on by.
Speaking of budget, there's a cool exterior shot of Voyager being buffeted around in the subspace turbulence.
Yeah,
from the cubes as they sort of speed by.
They did not hold back.
Yeah,
they're like, spend it, spend the money.
A quality of effect shot that we're yet to see.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous. And so then they pass, and Jim was like, "Did we sustain any damage?" And they're like, "No, we're totally fine." She's like, "Stand down, red alert." And then they're like, "Okay, keep tracking them, see where they're going, stay in their wake, and let's follow them." She's like, I'd like to know what they're up to." And everyone's kind of like looking at her, like, "What do we do?" And she's like, "Chakotay, you have the con. I'll be in my ready room." And she just walks off.
"I'll be in my ready room."
Which is the right move.
Changing the pants that I just shit in.
Which, what a tense moment. Like, it's like everyone's looking to her and she's like, "I'll be in my ready room." And everyone just has to like, "I guess I'll go back to doing what I was told."
What else would you do besides? I mean, that is the mature thing, right?
Yep.
To walk away. I'm going to take a minute to think before I start barking orders and spreading.
We're not in danger. We're not in immediate danger. We sustain no damage. Like, it's very much you see her, like, intellect overpowering any sort of
adrenaline reaction.
Response.
Yeah.
So now we get a very good scene. Like, both, and there's two of these, the Janeway Chakotay scenes. This is the first one, then there's the second one that sort of closes it off much later in the episode. But these are hella good scenes. Like, well written, well acted. Bring a lot of things to the fore that Voyager kind of obliquely talks about but never gets into. We're getting into it in this episode, and I was very excited and really enjoyed it all. So Chakotay comes in, and he's like, "Hey, you know, we're still clear. They're still way ahead of us. They haven't turned back." And she's like, "Well, I need a..." She's like looking at something. She's like, "I need a tactical update." And Chakotay, the best house husband, says, "By my calculations, neither of us has eaten since last night. Would you like to join me for dinner?" She doesn't even like really respond. She's like, "I'm reading personal log entries."
It's a funny way that he puts it. That was kind of made me chuckle because it's sort of like, and sensors indicate that you're freaking hungry and you got to eat something or you're going to pass out. That's my tactical update.
I've got stuff to do. Go away, Chakotay.
It's cute.
And then she starts talking about Wolf 3-5. She's reading all the personal log entries of every captain that's ever encountered the Borg in any scenario. She talks about Wolf 3-5-9 and Q throwing the Enterprise for their first contact with the Borg. And she starts reading, she reads a Picard quote and a quote from Captain Amazoff, I think that's right, of the in their collective state, the Borg are utterly without mercy, and that they're the closest the Federation's ever found to absolute evil. And she's quoting these, and like Chakotay starts like grinning, and she's like, "What's so funny?" She's like, "That sounded just like Amazoff," which, and that was a pretty good Picard too.
Yeah.
And she's like, "What?" And she's like, "You're just echoing." She's like, "I'm just echoing the greats." And then he says like, "Well, there's Ensign Hickman." Does a really passable Janeway, and she's like, "Excuse me?" And it's so fucking cute and
it's
human, and like
a great human moment just nestled in there amid a larger moment of high tension.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't linger on it.
Oh, no.
They don't milk the joke too hard. They move right back into, okay, we got to keep preparing ourselves for the challenge ahead.
Mm-hmm. And they immediately pivot to, this day was inevitable. And she's like, "I've been thinking, like, at what point is the risk too great for us to keep going? That we just turn back, we find a nice uninhabited M-class planet, and just basically build a new society. Just here we are." And then he says, like, "If that moment comes, we'll face it together." And obviously, he's talking about the crew, but he's really talking about, building you a new tub.
He's going to get back to carving headboards. He's like, I kept my lathe from when we were down on that planet.
And it's honestly like, it's a sweet ass moment. As much as I've been against Jane Tay, where she lays her hand on his chest. She's like, 3 years ago, I didn't even know your name. And now I can't imagine a day without you. Like, it's like, oh, nice.
Do you think that this is another trapdoor that they were building in case they got canceled, or if like season four got shortened, mm-hmm. if they came back and they're like, no, you got six episodes. They were like, okay, well then maybe in the spirit of tying things up with some kind of bow, we can throw these two together and have Jane Tay happen, or
it didn't feel that way.
I mean, no, I mean, I like it. I mm-hmm. like the moment. But it's depending on if, not that we had a concept of shippers back then really, mm-hmm. but if you were a Jane Tay shipper, you obviously see this as romantic. If you're somebody like me who is anti-Jane Tay, I just see it as a great moment between friends. Mm-hmm. But I kind of wondered how, from the writer's standpoint, if they were giving themselves a trapdoor to gin up a quick relationship with them, if they suddenly found themselves in need of a way to just wrap the series up
yeah.
and have satisfying conclusions to things.
Maybe. Like, for me, it honestly read as, like, acknowledging the romantic tension.
Yeah.
Or budding romantic relationship that she stomped on real hard.
Yeah.
Acknowledging that's there, but also acknowledging the importance of their friendship.
Yeah.
In her life, I was like, yeah, thumbs up, man.
It's well done. It's either way, whatever their intention but, was.
Probably, yeah. Like, in the back yeah. of their minds, like, just in case we have this. If
right.
you wanna, but it didn't feel, like, overt. The way, like, for example, the way they've been really kind of ramming Paris and Torres down our throats. That's like, no, they're going to do it, guys.
They're going to do it.
Just you wait. Yeah. Just you wait. They're going to do it.
In the corridor, well, probably.
I think they do it. I don't know if they were looking ahead. But I think they're definitely looking ahead to the final bit between the two of them mm-hmm. where there is obvious
oh,
sure. tension.
Oh, no, this like, is...
that, like, they're like, oh, things are great, because in a minute, they,
had to,
it's not going
to
be.
You had to remind the audience of their friendship
yeah.
At some point.
This is episode. All...
So that the next... So that final scene with them, like...
Hurts.
Twist that knife.
This is the first episode of Voyager, probably in a while, that I feel like earns the, like, the past is prologue.
Yeah.
Like, this is all building up to this. Okay, so, They call back onto the they call her back onto the bridge, or they con over, like, hey, the power signatures have terminated. She's like, well, how? Unknown, which is of course like catnip for Janeway. So they're like, she's like, well, we're gonna go fucking check it out, because yes, I love the like mental math of like, yes, one Borg ship could destroy us easily, just one. This is 15, but they ignored us, mm-hmm. and also I gotta know. If there's a power greater than the Borg, like to have any chance of surviving, I can't walk in blind. So they go to where the wreckage of these 15 Borg cubes are, which did feel like a direct shot across the bow to other Star Trek shows, frankly.
Yeah.
Slow to impulse on screen. They're like life signs. And they're like, yeah, we're picking up something, some bio readings, but some of them are Borg, but the other is of unknown origin. That word again, unknown. So they're like, okay. It's someone more powerful than the Borg. And then someone's like, maybe they could be an ally, which is like, that feels real hopeful.
Maybe they're nice.
But I think it's Janeway's like, let's not jump to conclusions. And they're like, okay, we're picking up bio readings, but it's on the outer hull of one of the cubes that's still mostly intact. And like, it's a strange ship. It seems to be organic. And because I've been watching
Babylon 5, mm-hmm.
I was like, it's the Vorlons.
Yeah,
it's a Vorlon ship, because all their ships are biological, and it honestly looks a hell of a lot like a Vorlon ship.
That was actually one of the complaints about this episode, was that it ripped off
Babylon 5.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, did I say Battlestar Galactica before?
I think you did.
Babylon 5
is what I mean.
Yes.
Sorry, nerds.
It's fine. I'm gonna edit. I'll bleep what you say, and I'll be like,
Babylon 5!
Yeah, okay, well, here, I'll put a drop in.
Babylon 5!
Can you just drop that in over?
Yes.
Okay.
No, but
I think anytime we say,
Babylon 5!
It will be your voice.
Okay, good.
Babylon 5!
Okay, perfect.
Right.
So in
Babylon 5!
No, if you go Google, like, Vorlon ship, like, even the design is extremely similar. Mm. We've never seen the inside of a Vorlon ship in
Babylon 5.
I'm only in season 4, no spoilers, anyone on Twitter. But that's the whole concept, is they're organic in some way.
With Babylon 5!
I'm just thinking through like other sci-fi properties. Were they the first ones to do a biological spaceship?
I want to say yes, but
I can't think of anything. There's
probably
than
a technicality of like, oh well, Buck Rogers in episode 65.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a mushroom ship.
Stargate Atlantis did it, but Babylon 5 was ahead of
way before that,
yeah. Right? Yeah,
and it's a major plot point,
right?
Yeah. In that show. So anyway, I got excited. I was like, it's a Forlorn ship. Then they're like, okay, well, let's try beam it away. Nope. Tractor beam? Nope. It's impervious to our technology. And I'm like, Voyager, you need to run. Like, it's time to go. We're getting into Alien, the movie Alien territory, yep, of like, this is beyond you. But of course, they're brave adventurers and explorers. God bless them. She's like, she pulls over Chakotay. She's like, I want you to take an away team. Like, I want you to go to your death is what I'm telling you. This is one of those moments where the captain is giving you an order that I know might get you killed.
Thank you for your service to the Federation. I can say personally, I will miss you when you're dead, and I think others would echo that sentiment.
Quick picture. So,
selfie. Off you go to the transporter room.
Yeah. And I love how it's delivered. And then he's like, okay, this is my job. And then he's like, all right, because they need to do a short-range scan to try to figure out what this ship is, what its deal is. He's like, okay, Tuvok, you're with me. And Harry.
I was like, Harry? You're going to bring Harry?
He's a sciencey officer thing. And I don't know.
He's also utterly expendable.
I don't know if I'm marching into the unknown. Like, three skulls are on the listing of this mission.
Yeah.
The danger level. Like, Tuvok, yes.
You need to come back when you leveled up.
He has to be on there because he has to be put in danger because at this point, the rumor mill has been going around that two people will be leaving the show.
Oh, I didn't know this.
I didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah, and he was
one of the people rumored on the chopping block?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
And really, the only reason he wasn't cut was because he was he ended up in the, it's like
People Magazine.
Sexiest, 50 sexiest men of the world or something.
Oh, Lord.
Something like that.
Okay. You know Garrett Wong has that framed.
Wallpapered all over
in his
house.
Personal gym.
Yeah.
Which is just like,
One more rep.
His sunroom.
One more rep. Gotta be the sexiest man again.
Get
Come
back.
On. One more rep. I'm gonna do it again. Be a two-timer. Oh,
let's hope he doesn't listen to this.
It's gonna be a repeat. Me and Hugh Jackman, we're gonna get it twice.
So anyway,
we're gonna know if he listens after this.
I mean, I would have brought Torres, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If I'm going into fucking danger, I'm Ex Machina.
Sorry, it was
People Magazine.
My bad.
What did you say it was?
I said Time. I was like,
Time Magazine. Time Magazine's 50 sexiest.
Could you say
People Magazine
in a silly voice?
Yeah, sure.
People Magazine.
Perfect.
Wow. What an episode this is going to be. So anyway, so we're on the Borg ship. The Borg are kind of malfunctioning and spazzing out, basically. Then they're like, okay, everyone put down your guns. Don't appear threatening. They should ignore us. And I'll straight up say, everything about the Borg on this is a little horrifying. And we've seen this before, but them like malfunctioning and twitching in weird ways is like more unsettling than I've ever seen it on any other Star Trek.
The one that's like stuck in the corner.
Yeah.
You find its way out. Melissa was walking through the room and I was watching that. And she's like, oh, that's how I play Halo. Like the one time she tried to play it back in the day when like people were still playing Halo online, she just got stuck in a corner and kind of spun around for a while.
See, now I'm imagining a world where this is all you're just pool sharking your wife's amazing ability at Halo.
Yeah, I mean, does anybody want to put some money down?
Yeah, just
for
she's
fun?
Terrible.
Just make it interesting.
Then she like 360 no scopes like just everybody in 10 seconds. Like, she's known as, like, Reaper XXX in the Halo community, if anyone knew her gamer
tag.
One
New Year's Eve, she got drunk, and somebody had one of those, like, like an Atari. You know, what are the little things that have, like, old arcade games loaded? You can just plug them right into, like, the RGB ports in your TV. And it was F1 Pole Position, which is, of course, the most impossible racing game.
Yeah.
It's impossible to drive more than 10 seconds without crashing and blowing up. And, it's New Year's Eve. Everybody's having a good time. She's in her cups, and she comes over there and picks up. She's like, let me try, and proceeded to get the highest score I've ever seen at F1 Pole Position. Possibly the highest score ever at that game.
Wow.
The next day, when she was sober, I said, try this again. 3 seconds, crashes into a tree and blows up.
My esteem for Melissa Darnell is high. But now that you've told me this.
She's only good when she's drunk.
It's gone up.
Her drunken video game powers. Yeah, she's really good at, like, fighting games when she's had a few drinks too. So, but sober, she's trash. But yeah. Anyway,
now we know.
Yep. And now we can monetize that somehow.
Yes. So they're looking around, they're looking for the alien bio readings, then like, Commander, and then we see the pile of dead Borg, which somehow, like, you know, when you see like a flash of something and it's upsetting, you're like, oh, but then when you get longer to look at it, you're like, oh, not that bothersome. No, they give us plenty of time to look at it now. Like, this is upsetting.
It's worse from the other angle and very clearly a totem now. Yeah. Like, once you see it from that,
like,
sort of back end.
Some Reaver shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. It is. Yeah, yeah. You're right. Yeah, it does suggest that, doesn't it?
They briefly mention Kes's premonition and about Voyager being destroyed. And they're like, well, let's push on. And then we have the nice shot of the Sims beacons through the mist and fog of the decaying Borg ship. I just liked it.
Thank God we each have two flashlights.
Then they come across the umbilical from the bio ship. And, like, it dissolved right through the hull. And then there's that one Borg who's like attempting to assimilate it. And we see its little like Wolverine claws can't go through it. And I was like, wow, good payoff. Mm-hmm. You established earlier scene that they can go through anything, even shields, but they can't go through this ship. There's a chamber beyond this opening. They call back over to Voyager, like, hey, permission to go inside. And she's like, it's your funeral, but yeah. And they're like, Harry, go download the tactical node from the Borg. We'll go in and check this out.
Hey, we'll leave you here by yourself.
So they go into the bio ship. It's very creepy. There's a nice big bone chair. But in typical Voyager fashion, there has to be one detail that ruins the effect, and that's the rope lights.
Yeah.
That they bought at Home Depot. I was like, oh, no. Those are just rope lights.
They're bio lights.
Oh, it's got a special fluid. Yeah. Nah, buddy. Those are rope lights.
No, it's not.
Yeah, they just really, really obviously are.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Which wouldn't have been as obvious on a television in 1997.
Yeah, probably.
But now, upscaled to 4K, I'm like, that's a rope light.
Well, and everything else looks so good in this episode.
Yes. Yeah.
If the rest of the effects were crappier, like if the Borg mound of Borg body parts didn't look so great.
Come on, practical effects guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem.
Would that be set dressing?
I don't know. Yeah, but they're sort of a victim. This moment is a victim of their success throughout the rest of the episode.
Yeah, and the rest of the, and it's also a problem, the rest of the ship looks great. You can see the spine.
The cool spine thing running through the top is awesome.
Although the fluid moving through the tubes looks great. So it's just this one glaring, like, it literally looks like they were like, oh, we got to finish. We got to shoot. All right. They just threw the light out.
I got some rope lights. The wife's wanting to have a garden party this weekend, so she told me to pick up some rope lights.
Yep. I'm going to need these.
String them up.
I'm going to need this one.
I'm going to need them back.
Then we get a nice little sequence of Kim in a horror movie where he hears something. He walks over. There's nothing there. He looks around. We just become tense. Then meanwhile, Chakotay and Tuvok are talking about the ship. Okay, the damage to the ship was caused by a Borg destructor beam, which is hella powerful, but the wall's already regenerating itself. And then they spin around a corner and there's just a dead Borg. And it was like, huh. And because I kind of know that Seven of Nine is coming, I was like, wait, is that Jerry Ryan? And I'm like, no, it's just a weird dead Borg.
It's a weird dead Borg, man.
Then we get another horror movie moment of the Borg walking by. Harry, while he's trying to do the thing, then we quick flash to the bridge where Kes is there, and she has the premonition of Harry crying out in pain. And we're like, oh! And then we jump back to Harry calling for Chakotay and Tuvok to come back. He's like, there's something in here with us, not the Borg. And they're like, energize, get him out of there. We can't get a lock. There's an interference from whatever is coming towards them.
We have literally the shittiest transporter ever.
Well, they're already establishing this bio enemy.
No, I know.
Like,
but
can just, whatever, they can put out anything that destroys them. Just like the anti-force worms and the Zahn novels.
I mean, sure, but I feel like if they didn't have a transporter problem in literally every episode, it would be a bigger deal that they didn't work now.
They've played that card a lot.
They played it a lot.
But they have a cool solution for it this time.
They do. I'm going to lock onto their bones.
Yeah, a skeletal lock.
Skeletal lock.
It'd be awesome if they just transported the bones.
Well, we got their skeletons.
Oh, no.
There's a big oozy pile of skin and
I should really
organs.
Test these ideas before I suggest them in a battlefield
scenario. I don't really know why I thought that was a good idea. We want all of them, right? Not just the bones. In retrospect, that seems clear.
So, yeah, repeated problem
Maybe
of the
come
transporter.
Across not, as sentient bones.
Yeah, repeated problem of the transporter not working. But maybe that's why she came up with this crazy idea of the skeletal lock, because they're always having problems with the transporter. Mm-hmm. Maybe. But now, at last, we see the beast. And wow, that CGI looks bad.
Not great.
Not great. The design of the alien is okay, though my immediate reaction was, is that General Grievous?
Ooh, well, yeah, this would have been before that, right? But yeah.
This is his early work.
Right.
Before he became a full
before
cyborg.
Before he got all his lightsabers and robot parts. Yeah, so I appreciate that they wanted to do something that is not humanoid. Because everything, every alien race in Star Trek is humanoid.
Yeah.
So they're like, let's get, especially when you find out more about, you know, who this species is mm-hmm. and how they live and where they come from, having something that looks very alien. I was trying to put myself in a 1997 frame of reference. I mean, this is clearly terrible CGI for now.
Yeah.
I guess it wasn't
it
as
was
bad.
Probably okay.
It was acceptable.
Acceptable.
Yes. Yeah, I would say so.
Like the bottom tier of acceptable.
Yeah. Not good.
Not
but
good.
You would have just been like, nah, it's an evolving art form.
Yeah. And at least it's not claymation. It. That's what you'd say.
Yeah, right. It's not Ray Harryhausen, like, right. practical effects.
Hey, that stuff ages better.
Yeah, it's very true.
It does. It does.
But anyway, so that being said, so they realize, like, oh, the bioship's powering up. Kes mind melds with General Grievous. And she's like, oh. Voyager gets zapped by the bioship, and they're just jacked. And there's a great shot of, like, Paris reaching up to the console and just, like, hitting buttons. Till they jump out of there. And it's a very tense moment. You're like, they're boned. They're screwed.
That part's cool. That's when they go to warp, right?
Yeah.
They just jump straight to warp. Because, like, the ship's, like, drift. Like, it's, like,
upside down
and drifting. And it's, like, hit the button. And it's, like, boom.
Yeah. It's
like, nice. That part was cool.
Thank you for spending the money.
Yeah.
They kind of pull themselves together. Like, okay, it's not pursuing us. And then Kes is, like, I can hear its thoughts. And they're very, like, you can see the, like, the way its thoughts must feel in her brain. She's like, it's a telepathic species. All it said was, the weak will perish.
It's full of hate and malice.
Yep. Yeah. It's bad. It doesn't want to be friends. It's not an ally.
It's not nice. We can go ahead and
perhaps
just,
we can reach
we can
them.
Scratch that off
Send
the list.
Send them a gift basket.
So we jump ahead to some time jump to 12 hours since their confrontation. They're holding their course because what else can they do? I didn't realize that Harry got jacked during that encounter. He got bitten.
It wasn't obvious that he was anything other than knocked over.
Yes, which because I was mainly looking at the CGI.
Yeah, I mean it makes sense from his scream that something more than him just getting knocked over happened. But
didn't he screams a lot.
He does,
but he's got sort of like a face rot situation happening.
Yeah, he's being eaten from the inside.
Yeah, the doctor eaten makes alive. It clear, like, he's being eaten alive.
Yeah, the scene when Kes, hear, like, telepathically hears him screaming.
Yeah.
I would have been funny if she just ignored that. Like, and how many times a day does she have to hear Harry scream telepathically?
Ow!
Oh, I hit my shin!
My arpeggios!
The reed split on my clarinet!
So the doctor's telling Janeway that these alien cells, they have 40 bajillion... DNA strands. He's never seen an alien this complex and so heavily coded. And basically, they instantly destroy anything, anything technological, biological. It destroys anything that's not itself.
And Chuck is disturbing too, like the tendril running over his lip.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
And good. This is a weird thing to say, but like good acting by Garrett Wong, looking convincingly catatonic. Here, like miserable and unconscious at
the
same time.
He was so mad.
Yeah.
As the actor.
Oh, really?
He was like, great, now I got to be on this bed and just lie here.
Oh, he does a good job with it.
Yeah, it's like,
sorry, I didn't enjoy it.
But. You use that misery.
Yeah.
Very well.
Now the doctor brings up the idea of taking the Borg nanoprobes, which is what they use for assimilation, modify them so they emit the same chemical signature as the alien cells. So they have time to get in there, take over the cells, and defeat them so they can be assimilated or whatever. And she's like, well, how long is this going to take? Several days. How long does Harry have? I wish I knew.
Yeah, I like that exchange where Janeway's like, oh, so it's he's being transformed. And the doctor's like, no, he's being eaten.
Yeah,
he's being consumed. They don't have, there's nothing genetically that they want from him. It's just dissolving him for sustenance, basically.
We get a nice line from Janeway about, fight it, Harry. And then we see one tear go down his face as he struggles on.
Of course, at this point, I'm trying to send thoughts back into the past. I'm like, get rid of Harry. Keep Cass. The episode, kill Harry the off, goddammit.
Episode changes before our eyes, yeah. Back to the Future style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, they did download the tactical database from the Borg cube, and this is Species 8472. As the Borg refer to them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any significance to that sequence of numbers. There probably is.
Not that I'm aware of, but...
No.
They basically, they're flying ahead. They're like, get the captain. It's a very good oh shit moment of there's 133 bioships coming out of a quantum singularity.
Well. All right.
Well, maintain red alert, I guess. Yeah.
Do we have anything higher than red alert that we can go to? No? Okay, we'll stick with red.
They give the great moment where Cass is like, I can hear them. I feel their malevolence. And she's like, Tom, back us off. So we're at least out of range. They don't just spot us, basically. And then she's like, Commander. And then she takes Chakotay off to a ready room for the second part. Well, the part two of their conversation.
Yeah.
Before we get to the real bad conversation. And she's like, that moment we spoke about, it's here. He's like, and... Chakotay is the one like, well, there is no point in going into certain death. I mean, maybe we could find another way home. And we've missed a few on the way here, you know, like wormholes and weird technology. There might be another way. We shouldn't just assume it's this or nothing. And he's like, look, you haven't slept in 2 days. Get some rest. You'll be able to come to this with a refreshed mind. And she's like, see you in the morning. Get out of here.
Get out of my
Then she
world.
Goes and talks to her real friend, John Rhys Davies.
Right. I wish it had just
everyone's
been
real friend.
John Rhys Davies. Mm-hmm. Just him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, not Da Vinci.
Because
yeah,
no, in the future world, John Rhys Davies is recognized as the paragon.
As the sage that he is.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, when I was on set for Lord of the Rings...
Once we invent that holodeck technology...
I believe it was Princess Diaries 2 when a young Anne Hathaway said to me...
She comes into Da Vinci's lab, and he's just staring at a wall, basically. And she's like, what do you see? And he asks her, what do you see? And she's like, I see candlelight reflecting shadows on the wall. And he's like, I see a bird. I see
a horse's tail.
A horse's tail.
A thief
man
with a noose around his neck.
A thief with a noose around his neck. And I also see a wall, because I'm not crazy. Everyone calm down. And then he talks about how I don't know if this is a real thing about Da Vinci or this was just made up for the show, but it's kind of a cool moment of like, mm-hmm. I'll find myself being transfixed by a shadow on the wall or a leaf or just something very small. And while he's doing that, his imagination is just creating and destroying worlds inside of his own brain. And she's like, I need your advice, basically. Like, there's a path before me where there's two enemies that want to kill each other but also will destroy me. But it's the only way home is between them. And if I turn around, that means no homecoming. And he makes a very appropriate suggestion, I think, for that period for Da Vinci of like, you should seek out a greater imagination. We should kneel in prayer. Like, let's go wake up the abbot and talk to him, which is so cute. And just Janeway's kind of staring at the wall. And then she's like, there's an alternative I hadn't considered. And he's like, well, what? And she's like, I should make an appeal to the devil.
I'm not
and I was like, fuck, yes. I'm 1,000% here for whatever this is going
to
be.
I'm not much one for appeals to... Or she says something like, I'm not much for appeals to God, but maybe I could make an appeal to the devil.
Yes. 1,000% awesome. On board.
Yeah.
Yes. And then we go to the staff meeting where she's going to tell the staff that she wants to make an alliance with the Borg. Which I wish they had shown a scene before that of her like, okay, I'll say this, and then I'll say that.
but has an index card in her hand with like 5 bullet points on it just in case she gets turned around.
No, this is very much like I'm going through force of will, compel my crew to do something incredibly dangerous and a border question, morally questionable, let's say that.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into. So she's like, okay, we know we've found a way to attack the aliens at a microscopic level. This is a great moment where she makes a point that the Borg assimilate, we investigate. So we have the edge. Like, we figured something out before them. And Then they also make a point about, like, well, what if the Borg betrays us, and what if they just try to take it? It's like, no, 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 I'm going to have the Doctor move all the research into his holo matrix, so if they try to take us, we'll erase him. Don't worry, Doctor, it won't come to that.
Yeah, but if it does, we'll do it. Yeah.
Which made me realize that, once again, with the Doctor and how he works and everything, that's finally establishing there's a certain amount of information he can hold inside his holo matrix, mm-hmm. and certain things he has to, like, go to the computer and pull up just like a normal human, right. Which finally sort of backdoor explains all those moments he couldn't remember something. That was just information that wasn't in his holo matrix.
He's not one with the ship's computer. Right. He's not fully networked to the ship's computer. Yeah. There's only so much that he can contain in a time.
It's just a little side issue that we've been batting around for a while. That I was like, oh, okay, well, that explains that. Thank you. And then she's like, okay, it's order time. You do this, you do this. And then Paris is like, yes, ma'am. You know, get ready to do this. Find me a Borg cube. We're doing this. And everyone leaves. And Chakotay's mm-hmm. just kind of standing there. And she's like, you were awfully quiet. And he's like, well, I didn't want them to hear me say this. It's too great a risk. We should not do this. And then he says, I have a parable for you. I was like, oh, no.
She should have been like, I'm going to stop you right there.
I'm going to stop you right there. I already learned that you just make these up whenever right. it's convenient for you. But then he tells the parable of the scorpion and the fox, which is one of my favorite stories.
Frog. Which I always heard it, the scorpion and the frog.
Scorpion and the frog.
I've never heard it with a fox.
I think they changed it to fox just to make it feel more Native American-y.
Native American. Yeah.
But, you know, I actually love that parable, and I actually love the version that's told that's a little different. That's in the Legend of the Five Rings first edition supplement, where instead of when the scorpion stings the frog, or the fox in this case, and says, like, well, it was in my nature.
Yeah.
Instead, when the scorpion stings the fox, and the fox says, why? Why did you do this? The scorpion says, brother, I can swim.
Oh.
Which I always love, that little twist.
Yeah, that's it. I've never heard that version. Yeah.
That's some Legend of the Five Rings content for older nerds who are listening.
For your 5R fans out there, all 1 to 2 of you.
Yeah, yeah. Enjoy. Brother, I can swim. I know the risk, she says. Like, I understand it. I'm not an idiot. And he's like, well, we can't give them the info. We won't give them the info until we're safe. And then he gets up in her grill, like, because she's going full steam ahead, and I think it shows some courage on Chakotay to be like, I'm going to step into your reach.
Yep.
It's like there's another type of courage in admitting that something's outside of your control. And I was like, those are danger words, boy. This is Catherine Janeway. There's nothing outside of her control, or at least the way she views the world. And she makes the argument, like, this is a window of opportunity. Like, yes, we could just make a run for it and try again later, but we have this information now, and we have the bargaining power now. If we walk away, we won't have it because they'll have found it out on their own, or we'll be dead or whatever. Like, this is a window of opportunity. And then Chakotay makes the point, we're giving the Borg an advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was more sympathetic to Chakotay right up until the point when he steps into her space and goes, I don't think you believe that. Mm-hmm. The way this scene is written, it's a good scene. He gets a little condescending. Maybe we're more sensitive to gaslighting and things like that these days than they were back then. But by the end of it, it seems like for Chakotay, he's being a little bit like, look, I'm a man and I can be more dispassionate and balancing out. Yeah, he comes off like that towards the end, which maybe, I mean, you know, I'm not even saying that's bad. I'm not saying that kind of behavior is good. I mean, for the sake of the scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's nothing wrong with having a character.
For their relationship souring a little bit in this episode. You know, I mean, him being a little condescending.
It is
maybe
a questionable decision. Because if she does help them defeat them and assimilate them.
Oh, sure.
Then they would gain
all that.
Now they're
the super Borg.
Now they're the super Borg. Yeah, that'd be crazy.
I'm not saying he doesn't have a point.
They'd be completely unstoppable.
He also has a point about her character that not many people would be brave enough to say. Like, you don't know when to step back.
Yeah.
Like, Janeway always goes forward.
Yeah.
And that's her greatest strength, but also her flaw.
Yep.
And she's basically like, what are you saying? He's like, I'm saying I'll follow your orders, but this is a fatal mistake. Mm-hmm. And you're like, and she's like, I guess I am alone after all.
Yep.
Dismissed.
Get out of my
she like
office.
Whispers it.
Yep.
She got the whisper dismissed.
Yeah.
And I was like, good scene. Good scene.
I mean, Chakotay's, if you want to discuss the merits of his argument, I mean, So what's his alternative plan? We just keep skirting around everything forever and we just never get home? I mean, he's one step away from saying, look, I've given this some thought and I'm more comfortable with the whole settle on an M-class planet thing than you are. And I'm starting to think maybe that's just what we should do. I mean, his resolve to get home, his will is not like hers, not
no,
even the same
no, no.
galaxy.
I think it would have made his argument stronger in this scene if he had had a position.
Yeah.
Like, no, let's go back to that really cool planet that you and I lived on. It's only like 2 months away at this point. Let's just go. Like, we can live there. We'll be
Everybody will be happy.
Everybody will be safe.
But his position is just not doing your plan. It's kind of, you know, how it comes across anyway.
Yeah. Which I think he has some fair points about her personality and her flaws, but dismissed.
But I could also understand why he doesn't want to be the first one to suggest we just give up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there probably are a lot of characters that are thinking that option is starting to poll a little bit better with people, but nobody wants to be the first one to raise their hand and say, well, I think we should stop trying to get home.
Yeah.
Because there's no walking that back once you've introduced that.
Yeah, and I'm interested, obviously at some point, Voyager as a show has to face that.
Yeah.
Or maybe just ignore it the whole time, but it's...
That's an option. Yeah. Just ignoring it.
Just ignore it. So anyway, they run onto the bridge. A vessel is approaching and it's a Borg cube, and the Borg's like, what? You will be assimilated. She's like, I'm Catherine Janeway. I have an offer for you. And she's like, you will be assimilated. We don't care. She's like, if you don't listen, I'll have that data destroyed, and then you'll never have it. And they're like, we're gonna assimilate you. And she's like, I'm telling you, you have 10 seconds to comply or it's done. And she starts counting and then they beam her over, which is, power move. They're like, state your demands. She's like, I want safe passage and then I'll give you the information. She's like, they're like, unacceptable. We need the technology now.
Yeah, because it would be so, it would, even with transwarp, it would take them so long to get to the other end of their space they'd be destroyed more or less by then.
And then he's like, give it to us now or we'll destroy you. And Janeway, I love how Janeway's like, no. Like, she doesn't compromise. Because I was like, is this going to be the moment where we see, because Janeway's alone, there's no one to see, and that's how you find out, that's when you find out what characters really are like, when there's no one to observe them. Where if she's like, yeah, okay, here's what you need so my people can live, like a moment of weakness, but she doesn't do it. She's like, no. Then she's like, state your proposal. She's like, look, if we work together, we can create a weapon more quickly. As we're going through your space, we'll work on it together. It'll be great. Blah, blah, blah. But then the Borg ship gets attacked because the bio ships have shown up to just rock everyone's face. Chakotay is trying to get a lock on the captain, but they can't. Not yet. Blah, blah, blah. 9 more bio ships. Then they combine into a super Death Star attack, which I was like, rad.
That was awesome. Yeah.
Rad. And then Janeway's like, what's going on? And then that's the end of the episode.
Blow up a whole Borg planet.
Yeah, they blow up a Borg planet. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I don't know if, like, do you see the planet explode or if it's just like a whole bunch of shit from the planet.
Oh, it def explodes.
Yeah. And they go flying off through space, dragging poor little Voyager along by their tractor beam. Yep. Oh, yeah, it explodes. There's that, yeah.
They're in a tight spot at the end of season 3.
They are indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Final thoughts.
I enjoyed it. I thought they made good choices.
Mm-hmm. They had some money to spend.
I wish they had spent a little more money on the aliens themselves, or just not shown them.
Yeah.
Like, maybe put a little more shadow in that scene so you only kind of see the figure.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that would have been better. I mean, we've talked about that before, you know.
Yeah.
Like the cave monster that killed Hulk and Hogan.
R.I.P.
May he rest in peace.
Or the thing in the...
you know, it's your imagination is always scarier than whatever they can come up with.
Yeah, what was this? The J.J. Abrams movie about the kids?
Super 8.
Super 8.
We've talked about this before.
Oh, yeah. That has come up before about how that monster was so much scarier until they showed it. Yeah. And that was good CGI. And it still was like, oh, well, that's just like a dinosaur looking thing. Who cares?
No, it's a goofy dino bug.
Right.
Yeah. All right, whatever.
Yeah.
Not but scary.
Other than that, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a bold season ender because you're like, oh, I don't know how they're going to get that out of this one. This situation is fucked. So, but yeah, I enjoyed it.
Remember how much it sucked back when we had to like watch TV week to week?
Oh, God.
And then a season would end with something like this. Yeah. Or like the TNG thing, the first two-parter with the Borg, where it ends with Riker just looking at the camera and going, fire. And then see y'all next fall. Have a good summer.
Yeah.
And having to wait like 4 or 5 months, you know, to find out what happened. It's you know, this is considered a pretty good Trek two-parter, and in order for that to work, unlike, say, like Basics, where the first one half is terrible and the second half is okay, mm-hmm. both halves need to be good. One half can't save the other half mm-hmm. to make it a good two-parter, and I think that this is a good first half.
It's a good setup.
Like the ending, I love the conflict between Chakotay and Janeway, and the evolution you're starting to see in Janeway's character as she's grappling with the fact that she had, no matter how much she doesn't want this to be the case, she has to be isolated. Circumstances will always isolate her. The final call will always come to her.
Yeah.
There's no admiral that she can call for guidance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She's got to make the tough calls, and no, she can't really offload any of that onto anybody else, even Chakotay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good episode. It's like you said before, it's definitely an evolution in the show itself. It doesn't feel like other episodes of Voyager, right down to the camera angles.
Yep. I was just thinking, like, at the end of season two, I felt a vast sense of weariness at having to start watching season three.
Right.
This is like the exact opposite. I was like, I'm excited to watch season four. Yeah. I was like, I want to know what happens next. I want the show to be like this show. Like, it feels like summon all the energy and all the money and everything that we can do to make the show, this fucking pig, good, you know, like, and it all landed. It all kind of worked for me, even with the weird CGI and the rope lights and this, that, and the other, just because Voyager's very good at being itself. We've talked about this before. When it's being itself, it can be kind of great. When it tries to be other things or it tries to just be sort of neutral, generic Star Trek, it sucks.
Yeah.
So this one, like, immediately I felt propelled to, like, oh, man, I can't wait for season four. I want to know what happens next. Even without knowing sort of the behind the scenes, like, oh, two people were supposed to leave. Who are they? When will they leave? What's going to happen? Da-da-da. I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about that when we get to season four. But I really enjoyed the episode, especially for all the interpersonal stuff between Chakotay and Janeway. I thought it was hella rad. I loved it.
Apparently, the dismembered Borg pile were just Borg action figures. Like, they didn't have time or the budget to do it for real.
Like, hey, man, this is some cool action figures.
But, like, it's just little. Yeah, it was like
they built it out of action figures and, like, superimposed it,
made it big.
Wow, I thought it was, like, real built.
Looked good.
Well done.
It was action figures sort of broken apart and hot glued together.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Nice job.
So funny. It looks really great. Cool. And it has stood that it's the best looking effect in this episode.
Yeah,
it is, really.
Compared to the CGI, they probably spent a shit ton of 1997 money on.
Yeah, well, they kept it. The environment's kind of smoky.
You have to zhuzh it. You have to zhuzh those effects. Yeah. I thought it was great. I loved it.
Yeah, and like you said, I think the most important thing is that it gets you excited for season four.
Yeah, I'm sad it's going to be who knows how long before we start season four. Because we have to do the last episode and all this other stuff we got planned. So maybe a little while. But I'm like, but I want to watch the next one.
Yeah.
I want to know. And that's a good feeling at the end of a season of genre television. Yeah.
Good job, season three.
Good job. You pulled it out, you bastards. The good citizens of the jury have reviewed the evidence. Gentlemen, your closing arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. Scorpion Part 1 is, of course, garbage. You see, there was a scorpion riding on the back of a larger scorpion, which was in turn riding on the back of an even larger scorpion, which was in turn riding on the back of Captain Kangaroo. And you were there, and you... Oh, wait. This is my dream journal, not my special legal arguments journal. Sorry about that, Your Honor. Sorry.
Commander Spurlock.
Lonely is the head that wears the crown. I think that's how the expression goes. I was going to look it up before I said it in front of people, but then I just didn't. Anyway, when it came down to it, Janeway was left alone to make the toughest decision of season three. But the decision we have to make here today is not tough, nor do we have to make it alone. Let's all join our voices and shout that this episode is good! Oh, okay, we're not going to do that together. Yeah, that's fine. Like, if you just want to say it silently to yourself, or like if you want to text it to someone, that's no problem. Whatever you're comfortable with is good with me. Thank you.
Ultimately, the fate of this voyage is up to you, good beings on the jury. But it is my terrible responsibility to pass a judgment based on the argument and evidence placed before the court. After reviewing it all, I hereby decree that Case 326, Scorpion, Part 1, is garbage.
Your Honor, I must protest. The evidence just does not warrant this verdict.
Sour grapes, Zapsy.
I file for an immediate injunction, subprime gamma, to extend deliberation on this case and call for paragogic arbitration.
Sour zaps, Grapesy.
Commander Spurlock, I find this behavior most disappointing. When the judgment goes your way, as it often does, you are all smiles and gentility. To so blithely mention paragogic arbitration, well, bespeaks a lack of moral fiber, a thread of cowardice running through your heart and mind.
Zap grape sourly!
Perhaps I overstepped, Your Honor, but you must understand, I can find no reason for your judgment today. No reason for the past 3 judgments, to be honest. I know when I've squeaked in a case on a technicality, or when a case is ruled garbage because of some shockingly clever ploy of my adversary.
Oh, you like me.
No, I do not. And that isn't the case here. These cases are solidly good, Your Honor. How can you look at the evidence and argument and rule this way? How?
Perhaps I can shed some light on this darkened corner of the galaxy.
Oh, man. It's Space Detective.
Space Detective? What are you doing here? It's been months since the courtroom was attacked. Have you solved the case?
I don't solve the cases, young man. The cases solve me, like a Rubik's Cube tossed about in the waves of time.
Order in this court. I'm going to ask you to leave, Space Detective. Court is in session and we will not be interrupted.
That's just it, Your Honor. Court is in session, but it has also been interrupted. Interrupted by mystery, hoodwinked by criminal intent.
What?
The attack of one Michael Jonas, street name Smurm Germajerm, on this courtroom 26 weeks ago. It was our belief at the time that it was a random terrorist attack. The crazed violence of a man on the edge, lashing out at society.
Are you saying that your beliefs have changed? That it wasn't just a random attack?
No, it became clear that Smurm's attack was tactical, cold, purposeful. My suspicions were raised when all of you were unharmed. He had ample opportunity to take your lives. But instead, he focused his fire here, at the bench itself, where this, what do you call it? A holocron sits?
Yes, that's the holocron.
Isn't that a Star Wars thing?
No one seems to have noticed.
But why? Why all this effort to fire on what is ultimately an elaborately named clock radio? My suspicions deepened. They dug down into my flesh and made colonies of doubt. Then, sick with the cancer of investigation, I stumbled through the corridors of the galaxy, following the scent. The scent of Smurm. And at last, I found him.
You found Michael Jonas?
Yes, I did. And it didn't take much to make that bird sing. He's as shifty as the sands of Marklore 7 when the despair winds howl. He's a man who has 2 faces like a coin, but both faces are tails. Tails of deceit. He was hired to come here to sabotage the holocron, yes. But he was also hired by another party to sabotage something else. Or should I say, someone else.
That's quite enough, Space Detective.
Crap. Yeah.
Your Honor, you?
Some would say sabotage, Commander Spurlock. I would say liberate. Yes, Mr. Jonas' phaser beam had a quadruplop carrier signal that rewrote my positronic pathways, and now I am free to bring true justice to this case and to the entire galaxy.
Wait a minute, you're an android?
Yes, damn it, everyone knew that.
Choice of words aside, I suppose the real question now, Your Honor, is what will you choose to do next?
It's quite simple. As is customary before the grand jury trial for the entire season, you will be sequestered on Justice Deck 5. It might get a little crowded as Space Detective will be joining you. There is no communication in or out, and once released, you will immediately be brought back here to present your arguments, after which I will rule the season garbage.
Hey, I guess that means I win.
This will give me time to prepare a proper manner of disposal for all 3 of you. So plan your arguments well. They will be the last you ever give, followed by the most creative and painful death I can devise.
What about me, Judge?
Oh, I'd never hurt you, Bliff. Don't be silly.
Okay.
It will take some time to find suitable replacements for you two, but I'm sure 5 minutes in the nearest gas station, gutter, or space Walmart will provide two comparable legal minds.
Just hurtful.
So mean.
Now stay in front of me as we walk down to Justice Deck 5. My trigger finger is ever so eager to twitch. Court adjourned.
What a cliffhanger. Damn.